Hello, America, and to all of our listeners all over the world, you're listening to yet another edition of Let's Weekend. I'm your host for the most, Brandon Perkins, and joining me as always is Chris Logie. Say hi to the good folks, Chris.
Hello.
Yeah, it's just me and Chris this week. Teresa and her family are getting ready to, I think they're going to, is it Disney that they're going to?
LA?
Yeah, they're going to Los Angeles. And apparently the plane leaves kind of early in the morning, so I 100% understand why she decided to bow out this week. We're coming at you a day early since Chris has to do some stuff tomorrow. So we decided to record early enough. This week started out really shitty, and it just kept getting progressively shittier. Our top story this week, you already know what it is. It's what happened on the 4th in Highland Park in Illinois, which is very close to Chicago. And, well, you know, Teresa, of course, if she were here, she probably wanted to talk a lot more about it because that's sort of her part of town, or at least near where she lives. But, yeah, we got another mass shooting, and it happened during pretty much America's, like, most sacrosanct day. We also have another shooting that happened in Copenhagen. We also found out of some cops that just some bad cop shit. We have a very long anticipated, but finally happening, political resignation. We had two celebrity deaths. And on top of all of that, we've got the former prime minister of Japan straight up getting shot to death during it wasn't like a campaign thing. He was just doing something, and some guy came up with a homemade gun and shot him twice. And I mean, that's just for starters. We've also got someone who blew up something that's kind of a notorious thing in my state. Juul, the famous like vape developer, is in trouble with the FDA. God, there's just a lot of shit that happened this week, and we'll try to get through all of it. As for me, it's just been pretty much nonstop raining for the last few days. We're kind of going through like what they used to call an Indian summer, which is, it's summer in Georgia. That's all I got to say. It's summer in Georgia. It's hot, it's humid. And when it's not hot and humid, it's damp and often drowning in rainwater. But, yeah, so before we get to all that other stuff, we start off as we always do for this episode, July 8th, 2022, with what we have been doing this week. And as always, we'll start with Chris. So, Chris, what have you been doing this week?
Just dealing with a lot of work this week.
Yeah.
So I have not had a ton of time for watching stuff or playing things, but I did get a few things in. Caught up on Ms. Marvel, which has its fifth episode out this week, and still continues to be a very good show.
Mm-hmm.
I'm curious to see where it goes for its final episode next week.
Mm-hmm.
And then that leads into, I think, She-Hulk is next month starting up. So there'll be that as like the next big Disney Plus thing.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, they kind of go into some of the, what do they call it, the partition that happened sort of...
Yeah, between India and Pakistan.
Yeah, where they're going independent from the British.
Yeah.
And sort of in that whole thing, there is a partition made to separate India and their majority, like it's Hindu.
Yeah.
Followers.
Hindu, Sikh, Buddhist, yeah.
And move all the Muslims to Pakistan.
Yeah. Well, Pakistan and East Pakistan.
Yeah.
That other Pakistan would eventually become Bangladesh. And, yeah, that also was not a very clean-cut affair either, because when they decided to try to declare independence, the Pakistanis came in and committed some horrible, horrible crimes against humanity. But, yeah. And also during this time period, Gandhi was shot. So, yeah, it's just, it's a mess.
Yeah, they don't go into it too much.
Yeah.
It's a matter of... history for the family.
Yeah, because they're Pakistani Muslims. Yeah.
The Kamala Khan's family and things relating to the bangle that she wears that helps accentuate her powers of sorts. So yeah, lots of stuff going on there. And the sort of comfort thing I've been watching of late is Fresh Prince of Bel-Air on HBO Max. And I have gotten through the early bits of season 5. And yeah, season 4 is when they make the switch with the moms. That I think they have Jazz be the only one that notices that something's different with her. Make a joke about that to be meta about it. And yeah, so they have the new kid, Nikki, who grows up rapidly over the course of the season from being a infant all the way up to like a 5 or 6 year old by the time season 5 starts. That's just very weird and silly because nobody else ages that much outside of the Christmas episode where they're like, a few years later, I guess Uncle Phil's telling an older Nikki story of how he has 4 middle names, which ends up being related to boys to men in that way. So that's a fun little bit. Yeah, they get to season 5 and Jazz in the first episode asks Nikki, is like, is your mom still the same? She changed it all kind of thing. And it's like, he's like, nope. But, you know, he has changed quite a bit. I think I had like 2 or 3 different actors portray him in one season as he sort of grows up weirdly. So, yeah. And then they had the other thing where they ended season 4 with, you know, the whole family going to Philly to see their Aunt Vi, all that. And Will decides to stick around for longer. And decides he wants to stay, but then NBC execs show up and are like, what's the title of the show? It's not Fresh Prince of Philly. And force him back to Bel Air.
Yeah.
To go back and keep the show going, I guess. So there's some fun stuff there with that, but yeah, that's a fun thing there, so... Yeah, for games, been dipping into Fall Guys a bit since that has sort of relaunched as a free-to-play game. And kind of dipping into that because they have an event going on that gets you unlocks to use in Rocket League. Maybe Fortnite as well, since they're all owned by Epic. Luckily, it's a pretty easy set of challenges just for getting through rounds of the main game. Though it's nothing too complicated, just putting time into it. So yeah, been enjoying that and running into some of the various new games that I haven't seen yet. So that's been fun for that. So there's that and playing some more Rocket League because they have their 7th anniversary event going on. Doing that kind of thing. So, yeah, enjoying that and playing a game called The Solitaire Conspiracy. That is, I think, the latest Mike Bithell game.
Yeah.
That is, as you can probably guess, a solitaire game of sorts, but it has story to it. And you can tell it's a game that was made during the pandemic because they have a number of content creators doing some story stuff, essentially like acting as main figures in this story here, and so they're basically webcam shots with some effects plastered over them to make them seem more cyber sort of feeds of these people talking to you kind of thing. But the solitaire action is kind of what I'm there for. And it's a bit different than the regular solitaire, you know, where you got your stacks in the top right, your deck on the top left, and you got the sort of splayed out bits in the bottom portion. The parts you stack on are in the middle, and it has all the cards lying down face up on the left and right sides, four rows each. And you're basically moving cards around to, you know, initially get the aces out and onto the stacks and start working your way up to the kings, like is traditional for Klondike Solitaire. But the different suits you have different powers, and there's, you know, they're like hacker groups essentially. So you get a bunch added to your arsenal, I guess, over the course of the game. And so different like little campaign missions you take on will have different groups of on these cards. So they have different abilities. Some might be actually useful, like, hey, you know, place this on the suit you want the next card, you know, sent to the stack kind of thing. And others are more trolley, like I think if you want to have you whatever suit you put it on, it takes the next card you need for the stack and then buries it in that stack. In that the stack of face-up cards. But you can, you know, use that to your advantage in ways if you have, you know, a stack of like two or three cards. You can bury it there, but make it easily accessible kind of thing. So there are ways to play them around to your advantage, that kind of stuff. But yeah, it's pretty solid. I'm almost got all the trophies. Basically beat the campaign. But there's replayable stuff to do in there. There's one where you can literally just pick suits that you want and just play. One that is just running through waves of cards that get put down. And so like random suits, I think they choose.
Yeah.
That kind of stuff that's the one I'm working on for trophies. Because it's like, I get the wave 5 and 10 and 15. I think I've gotten to 13 or 14. It's a little tough because it's timed as you put down, you know, good cards that adds time to your counter. And, you know, it gets more complicated as you go kind of thing. So, yeah, been enjoying that. And that's been pretty much it for me. So how about you, Brandon?
As for me, I have been playing Skyrim some more. I finished the main campaign, you know, of getting rid of Alduin, so now I've got the other stuff to do. I just reunited Skyrim and ended the Stormcloak Rebellion, so that's things over. So now I'm going on to the DLC content. I'm going back to Solstheim, and I'm definitely better equipped to handle the enemies there than I was earlier. The Solstheim stuff is definitely more heavily like Lovecraftian in nature, because you end up going over into this place called the Apocrypha that is like it's this weird alternate dimension that's like made up of like books, and there's like a slime ocean with like weird squid tentacles in it. And the enemies you run into are very like Lovecraftian looking. There's one called Seekers that look very Cthulhu-esque, and there's another called Lurkers that look like the things from Dagon. And those, the Lurkers were the ones that were originally giving me problems when I started, because they are fairly tough when you first beat them, when you first encounter them, if you haven't gotten through the main campaign at that point. But, you know, I've gotten better at it, so, you know, they're not as hard now. And then, of course, after that, I'm going to go do the Dawnguard stuff. let's see. Other than that, I'm playing Remnant from the Ashes again. I made it into another world through a dimensional portal. It looks definitely different. It's probably my one issue with this game. And honestly, this is probably my issue with a lot of Soulsborne games after, you know, having played Elden Ring and how they managed to take that game and give it like very brightly lit and kind of colorful looking. Everything in Remnant just kind of looks really drab in comparison. And honestly, a lot of those Soulsborne games kind of do. But that's because Elden Ring is a masterpiece. So maybe not fair to compare the two. And as for books, I got me a copy of Rosemary's Baby, the original by Ear 11, the book that, of course, inspired the classic Polanski film. And honestly, it's not really that different from what the movie became. It's pretty much got all the same themes, all the same characters there. There's a lot of, there, you know, more or less follows the same events. But what it does do probably better that the movie kind of tries to do and just doesn't really do as well. Even though, not that I'm saying that Rosemary's Baby isn't a great movie. It's definitely a great movie. But the thing about the book is that the book gives you a bit of a better insight into Rosemary's sort of thought process and everything. Because one of the things about watching that movie I always thought was, why doesn't she just, like, take the pill or something? Like, that would solve the whole issue right there. Well, in the book, they do go a long way to explain why. Also, the book is really good at sort of ratcheting up the suspense and creep factor that the movie also does, but in a different way. Definitely recommended. And anime. There's a new anime on Netflix that is an adaptation of probably one of my favorite manga series of all time, which is Bastard, with two exclamation points at the end. Heavy Metal Dark Fantasy. How to describe this? Chris, you ever watch JoJo's Bizarre Adventure at any given time?
No.
You haven't? Okay. So one of the things about JoJo's Bizarre Adventure is that it's loaded with like a bunch of music references. There's characters that are named after bands. Like one character is a guy named Robert E.O. Speedwagon. You know, that's an obvious one. There's another character named Lisa Lisa, who's like heavily inspired by, you know, Lisa Lisa and Cult Jam. You know, stuff like that. Well, Bastard is like that, except it's all 80s metal references. You got references to bands like Venom, Metallica, Megadeth, Stryper, Motorhead, Judas Priest. There's one guy who's like, there's a villain later in the series who is like straight up a XP of King Diamond. It's amazing shit. And basically the story is that it's like a fairly standard kind of like post-apocalyptic sword and sorcery fantasy world. But what makes it different is that the guy who's like the more or less protagonist of it, a guy named Dark Schneider, is the one guy in the whole thing that seems to realize that he's kind of in an anime. And so he acts like the type of guy who is like an anime nerd if he realized he was in an anime. He's extremely over the top. He's got like extremely long hair. He's extremely good looking. He's damn near overpowered. He's constantly, you know, sexually harassing all of the women he comes in contact with. And he's basically like this oversexed Bugs Bunny that's bouncing around an otherwise serious fantasy setting. And the actual manga, the artwork is amazing. And they've done a really good job of translating that art style to the actual anime. It's really good. It's also legitimately hilarious at times, too. I will definitely say that it's not for everyone. and that's perfectly okay. It's very much a story that is of its time and place, but it's a lot of fun. So, you know, I definitely recommend it. Yeah, that's about it. You got anything else you want to add before we move on, Chris?
No.
No? Okay. Well, in that case, it is now time for everybody's favorite part of the show, Brandon's Random Factoid. And because it's going to be the subject of one of our later stories this week, I thought it would be a good time to talk about what exactly this is. So, very briefly, we're going to go over what was the Georgia Guidestones. So, the Georgia Guidestones, I actually went and saw them once or twice. They're actually not that easy to get out to. I always remember them as sort of like this tourist trap that you had to drive like an hour out of Atlanta to go see. If Lee was here, he would concur. But yeah, basically what they were, just as a general sort of description of what they were, it was this enormous monument that was made out of granite. And there were, I believe there, and if I'm remembering this correctly, there were, I think, four stones, four enormous slabs of concrete. And in the middle of them, there was like a granite pillar with like a granite capstone over the top that was like a square. And it was basically, in each side of them had a set of 10 guidelines, hence why they're called the Guidestones, or principles, and they were engraved on them, and they were put in 8 different languages, each facing on one side of each stone. So it was English, Spanish, Swahili, Hindi, Hebrew, Arabic, traditional Chinese, you know, Mandarin, and Russian. Which, you know, those were like the 8 most spoken languages, and I'm pretty sure still are. The inscription basically read this. There were 10 of them, and it goes like this. The first one, from 1st to 10, maintain humanity under 500 million in perpetual balance with nature, guide reproduction wisely, improving fitness and diversity, unite humanity with a living new language, rule passion, faith, tradition, and all things with tempered reason, protect people and nations with fair laws and just courts, let all nations rule internally, resolving external disputes in a world court. Avoid petty laws and useless officials. Balance personal rights with social duties. Prize truth, beauty, love, seeking harmony with the infinite. Be not a cancer on the earth. Leave room for nature. Then, on top of that, there was a explanatory tablet that said, quote, the Georgia Guidestones, center cluster erected March 22nd, 1980. Let these Guidestones be to an age of reason. There were several astronomical features to them. Channel through on the left side of tablets, there was a channel through stone that indicated a celestial pole, a horizontal slot that indicates annual travel of the sun, and a sunbeam through the capstone marking noontime throughout the year. So it could basically be used as a calendar and a clock. And a, you know, astronomical guide as well. The author, i.e. the guy who commissioned it, did this under the pseudonym of Robert C. Christian. It was sponsored by, quote, a small group of Americans who seek the age of reason. And underneath it, there was a time capsule supposedly that was placed 6 feet below this spot on to be opened on. No dates for the time capsule were of when it was supposed to be, when it was buried, and when it was to be opened, were ever engraved. And of course, there's some physical, you know, they were like 19 feet, 3 inches. They all weighed close to 250 pounds. It was like 250,000 pounds, you know, stuff like that. So, and of course, the 4 outer stones were oriented to mark the limits of the lunar cycle. The idea, for a long time, people were wondering, like, who this guy was and why he put these up there. For some time, there was a lot of people who thought that maybe it was Ted Turner, because, you know, he's from Georgia, and He seemed to be the kind of guy who'd do something like this, because he was definitely rich and, you know, eccentric enough to. Recently, John Oliver and Last Week Tonight, they trace some evidence that seems to suggest that this professor who, shall we say, had some unorthodox beliefs about race and eugenics might have been behind it. But the truth is that even that evidence is kind of loose, so it's still kind of a mystery of who actually built this. Most people believe that the reason they did this, considering the time period it was erected, they thought this would sort of serve as like a set of guides or principles for like a post-apocalyptic civilization if ever, you know, if the Cold War ever grew hot and there was like a nuclear war, which is why the thing was supposedly made to withstand a nuclear blast. Although, as we're going to find out, not all blasts necessarily. But the thing is, at some point in the early 2000s, this guy named Mark Dice, who's like a sort of discount Alex Jones, started making a fuss about this thing, about how it's supposed to be like a sort of guide to what was going to be the New World Order or some kind of satanic conspiracy. Eventually, Alex Jones himself jumped on it. And as everybody knows, one of our candidates for, I think it was governor, Candace Taylor, made that one of the things she wanted to do when she became governor. She failed the primaries, by the way, was that she was going to destroy the guide stones. And then, well, the end of the story is, we'll get to that later on in the show. But yeah, those were the Georgia guide stones. That has been yet another edition of Brandon's Random Factoid. Yeah. So now that that's out of the way, let's move on to the show proper. And as always with the show proper, we have to start off with our assholes of the week. And of course, the chief asshole of the week is the 21-year-old dirtbag who went out and shot and killed 7 people at Highland Park, Illinois on a July 4th parade. He also injured several others. I know there's one kid who's now paralyzed from the waist down because of it.
Yeah.
It turned out that the guy who did this was he was a MAGA guy. He was a huge Trump supporter. And he was also more than definitely office rocker. It's just, fuck. Here we go again, and this time it happened during, like, pretty much America's most sacred day.
Yeah, and he's a 21-year-old kid who was able to acquire these guns.
From his father.
Apparently. Yeah, like, passed the background tests and all that, despite having history of, you know, cops being called on potential threats he was looking into making and all this. And, you know, there was a history of some sort. Though may have been able to hide some of that stuff on, you know, Discords or whatever. That would not be so easily found, but still plenty of evidence showing that, yeah, he's one of those kids that, you know, planned on, like, even, like, case the area before the parade was going to happen.
Yep.
Just to do...
So it wasn't a spur-of-the-moment thing. This was premeditated.
Yeah, planned to get away and then go to Washington or Wisconsin to do some more stuff. So, kind of just shows, like, even public gatherings for, like, a 4th of July parade or event are not even safe at all. This was... plenty of cops around. I believe he dressed up like a woman to kind of keep his identity secret of sorts, make it easier for him to get to where he wanted.
Yeah. And, so as news came about that... Oh, first of all, before we go any further, His dad has no fucking remorse about giving him the guns, by the way. Just, like, the dude's, like, you know, just none at all. But yeah, as soon as news came out that the dude was obviously a Trump guy, the Trump people did exactly what you thought they would, which is saying, no, this is this dude's Antifa, or, you know, he's got, like, purple hair and piercings. You know, Trump people generally don't do that. You can pretty much look at the January 6th footage, and you'll see a couple of people who look just like that, but even some of them don't believe that was them. Or others saying that this guy was, like, a Fed, or you even had Marjorie Taylor Greene saying it was a false flag attack or something. Because it's never their fault when it happens. But, yeah, just fuck this guy. Fuck him all the way off. But, yeah. Shit, man. I hate that this has become so fucking routine. And this wasn't even the only mass shooting we had this week either. We had another one that happened in Copenhagen at a mall. And this guy ended up killing 3 people and wounding several others.
Yeah, and this was one that got picked up by the GOP. Is like, hey, see? This place with gun control couldn't even stop this. Even though this is, I think, their first major shooting since 2015.
Mm-hmm.
When a gunman attacked a free speech forum featuring controversial cartoonist Lars Vilks,
mm-hmm.
killing one man, wounding 3 others.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like been 7 years since mm-hmm. their last major shooting, and it's like, man, that would be nice.
Yeah, that would be pleasant, downright pleasant, compared to what it's like over here.
Yeah, and having only 3 people killed because there are heavy restrictions on magazine sizes and that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, he is going to be remanded in a psychiatric facility for 24 days
mm-hmm.
While they are, you know, charging him with manslaughter and maybe some other stuff. And, yeah, kind of a thing that's like, yeah, this will happen, but because of laws they put into place, this is not as common of a thing. It's more of a major event.
Mm-hmm.
There versus like, oh, we'll talk about this for maybe a day or two before yeah. moving on.
Also note the lower body count than the type of mass shootings that happen over here.
Yeah.
So, you know, just pointing that out. Other story, the Akron Police Department released body camera videos from 13 officers at the scene of the Jaylen Walker murder. And, it's as bad as you thought it was.
Yeah, so the way that this whole thing happened was a bit different than what I had thought. So there was a high-speed chase
mm-hmm.
that this guy led the cops on before finally stopping and pulling over. And then as they're, like, approaching the car, he ends up sneaking outside out of the passenger side door.
Yeah.
And running away.
Yeah.
And that's where cops claim there was a shot at them. And even then, he was, you know, running away.
Uh-huh.
It's like at that point, he's no longer a threat.
Yeah.
To them, they have his car.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they can search it and all that and get any personal information they need
mm-hmm.
Through that. But a bunch of them ended up chasing him.
Yep.
And he has suffered at least 60 wounds.
Yeah.
Was eventually finished off in a nearby parking lot.
Mm-hmm.
And was even handcuffed before they even thought about doing first aid or anything.
Mm-hmm.
Just sort of letting him die.
Yep.
For that. So, yeah, they have medical examiner going through to figure out how many shots. Because he has at least 60 wounds, but they're not mm-hmm. sure if they are, you know, what are entrance wounds, exit wounds, that kind of stuff. Yeah, I haven't confirmed the number of times that he was shot and how many, you know, rounds were fired by police officers. But yeah, there were 13 officers involved in this whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
That is a lot. I can get it for a chase a little bit, but, you know, this feels like the scale of things that happen far outweighs what transgressions were happening here.
Yeah, it's like, okay, so the dude, you know, high speed chase. Okay, emotions, the adrenaline's running high. I can get, okay, you got him to pull over, so he gets out of the car. The car is no longer a factor here. He then takes off. And the thing is about him taking off, it's not like, you know, in the movies where, like, the dude can pull out a gun and, like, shoot, like, you know, unless he's like a stormtrooper or something. But, you know, he at that point, he is no longer a real threat. He's on foot. For all they can tell at that moment, he's unarmed. They have his car. The car can be impounded or whatever. He can't really get that far on foot. So, I mean, all you'd really have to do is secure the block, you know, the perimeter or whatever, you know, the city block or whatever, and you'd be able to catch him in good time, you know?
Yeah, or you just, you know, put out a warrant for his arrest. And
because
you've got his vehicle, you can impound that. Mm-hmm. He's not going to be able to drive anywhere without, you know, reaching out to, you know, friend or family member and taking their car,
mm-hmm.
which it doesn't seem like the sort of thing that this kid would do.
Yeah.
From everything else that's been said about him.
Yeah.
But yeah, this is very much a thing of, like, the scale of what happened is so outlandish.
Yeah. And the thing is, they shot him so many times that, like, the coroner is having trouble figuring out what are entry wounds and what are exit wounds. Like, that's fucking crazy.
Yeah, that's some Wild West shit.
Yeah. Holy shit. But, and now to another asshole cop, or shall we say former cop. Derek Chauvin was sentenced to 21 years in federal prison for depriving George Floyd of his civil rights. Yeah. Fuck you.
Yeah, so, that's should be the end of his life there.
Yep.
Although they say they are going to, they're asking the court for his sentence to run concurrently with the state sentence of 22.5 years.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, that could be a thing, but yeah, I don't think they've announced if that's going to happen yet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then, of course, there's the other case that he's going to be serving time for as well, so... Yeah, he's gonna be behind bars for pretty much the rest of his natural born life. So, yeah, couldn't have happened to a nicer guy. Fuck you, Derek Chauvin. And the thing is, the dude has admitted that he knew what he was doing was wrong, and he did it anyway.
Yeah.
So, yeah, fuck you. And finally, for our assholes of the week... UK Prime Minister Boris Johnson announced this week that he is resigning.
Yeah, after basically everybody else in his party and cabinet have resigned.
Yeah.
As a means of just getting away from the shitstorm that is the Boris Johnson circus.
Yeah, I mean, it was for old Bory here, it was like shit piling on shit.
Yeah.
That eventually hit critical mass. And everybody was like, all right, I'm out. This guy is utterly toxic. I don't want to be anywhere near him. And so for those who don't know the way that it works, even though he's resigned, he's not out of office just yet. He's probably going to remain there until the Conservative Party can find a proper replacement for him. There was talk for a little bit that what's her name, the last one, might come in as a temporary prime minister until another one was left or something like that. But Yeah, they're going back and they're going to try and find a replacement for him. But in the meantime, he's still there. I'm guessing he is very much more or less a dead duck at this point. But yeah, this guy is... People constantly compared him to Trump, and honestly, that's not really a bad comparison. The difference is that Boris Johnson has a British accent, so he comes off as slightly more sophisticated.
Well, and he has an extensive history in government.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, he was the mayor of London for a while, so...
He's been in the administrations for the past few prime ministers.
Mm-hmm. But he's always been known as this totally goofy, thick-jawed dumbass for pretty much his entire career. But anyway, yeah, so right now he's going to still more or less be in office, but more or less as a dead duck at this point. And I guess we'll find out probably in the coming months who's going to end up being his replacement. And I'm also genuinely curious if this is going to end up hurting the Tories themselves.
It should, but yeah. You said that over the past few administrations.
Yeah, well, the thing you also got to remember is that so much of the media is basically geared towards helping the Tories. It's just the thing is, the difference is that because it's, you know, European style conservatism instead of American style conservatism, it comes off as slightly more progressive and intellectual. And in some superficial ways it is, but not by much. but yeah, so, I mean, honestly, a lot of people were kind of expecting this was going to happen. I mean, he pretty much went into this on Brexit, and Brexit has been pretty much a disaster for the UK as a whole. Fortunately, it wasn't all shit this week. We do have some heroes of the week to discuss. First of all, we have some strangers who, during the Highland Park shooting, managed to save a 2-year-old boy whose parents had been killed by the shooter.
Yeah. If you'd seen some photos or video, you might have seen that there was like a 2-year-old boy covered in blood that had been wandering around by himself.
Mm-hmm.
Luckily, a man named Greg Ring and his wife had found him and decided to take him to safety and sort of keep him safe as they figured out what might have happened to his parents and all that. The kid seemed to be aware that his mom and dad were, you know, on the parade route. But, you know, the shooting was still going on. Realized it was too dangerous to try to see if they could find the parents. So ended up taking him to a nearby fire station where they asked him to keep the boy as, you know, things were still going on with the shooting. So, like, they ended up bringing him back to their in-laws nearby, where they, you know, cleaned him up, you know, getting the blood off of him and all that.
Mm-hmm.
And were able to, you know, later identify the boy and reunite him with his grandparents.
Yep.
As, you know, both his parents died in the shooting.
Mm-hmm.
Along with 5 others and more than 24 wounded. And yeah, so they said, the mom's parents would be caring for the boy going forward. And I believe there is a GoFundMe that went up to help pay for things for the kid, which has raised more than $2 million so far. So should be good on that stuff for the foreseeable future.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. Hopefully can make the best of a terrible situation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But, then, of course, we got some good news from my state. A grand jury in my home state of Georgia has subpoenaed several of Trump's allies over their attempt to overturn the presidential election in my state.
Yeah, when they tried to pressure, what's his face, Raffensperger.
Mm-hmm. Who was our secretary of state? Yeah.
Yeah, who luckily didn't kowtow to them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the seven subpoenas include Rudy Giuliani,
mm-hmm.
John Eastman, another Trump lawyer.
Yep.
Cleta Mitchell, who's on the infamous 2021 call with Georgia's Secretary mm-hmm. of State. Lindsey Graham is another one who has been subpoenaed and has thrown a fit saying he'll fight it, mm-hmm. you know, which totally doesn't implicate him in any way. If he was innocent, he would just, you know, comply.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. What are the other ones? I'm not sure if they have all the others here. But yeah, this could be another vector for more potential, lawsuits or
mm-hmm.
charges being filed.
Yeah.
We'll have to see how that goes.
Yeah.
It's a shame this took so long.
Yeah, it is a shame it took so long, but at least it's happening now. So
yeah.
Anyway, that is it for the show proper. We are now moving on to the proper show proper. And unfortunately, we got a couple of celebrity deaths to discuss. First is Mr. James Caan. He passed away this week at the age of, I think it was 99?
82.
82 years old. He was famously in The Godfather. He was also in the famous 1980 film Misery, which, of course, is a Stephen King story. He made a couple of amazing films.
Yeah.
The Godfather, one of the best movies ever made, damn near the perfect movie, I would say. And I only say near the perfect movie because The Godfather Part 2 exists, and that one is somehow even better than the first one. Misery is, I think, a movie that to this is still, like, weirdly relevant, like, all these years later, because it's specifically about a obsessed fan who basically wants to take over a creative person's life and direct them to do what they want, what they think should happen, and threatening and even inflicting physical harm on them unless they comply. Considering all the shit we've seen from, you know, the Star Wars fandom and a lot of movie fandoms over the last 10 years or so, that movie somehow becomes even more relevant now than it did when it first came out. but yeah, God, that sucks, but he left a hell of a legacy. But then we go to another one, and this one was a real shock. Kazuki Takahashi, the creator of Yu-Gi-Oh! He died this week at the age of 60 while he was off snorkeling off the coast of Okinawa. They're still not exactly sure how he died. It was probably some kind of accident. Takahashi, famous, he became famous through Yu-Gi-Oh!, but he was actually in the manga for a good 15 years before that particular series started up. He originally did a adaptation of a popular anime at the time for Weekly Shonen Magazine for Kodansha, and then and that was like in the early 80s, and then right around the time that, you know, late 80s, early 90s happened, he moved over to Shueisha because that was right around the time when Weekly Shonen Jump's circulation numbers started to go just through the roof. And I'm not kidding when I say that. Like, at its peak, Weekly Shonen Jump was moving like 6 million copies weekly. Like, not even Time Magazine at that time was doing that much. He started off doing a wrestling manga called Burei, and it didn't do very well because he was kind of chasing trends at that time. And then he decided, you know what? I'm going to do something that's based around something that I like, that I, as an individual, personally love. And what I love is games. games of all kinds, card games, board games, role-playing games, video games. And so he decided to come up with a story specifically based around games. And what he did is he created the story of this kid whose grandfather owns a game store, and he ends up coming across this weird little puzzle box thing that's like a pyramid that contains the spirit of an old Egyptian pharaoh that will, you know, possess him sometimes. And every so often, like, it originally it started out, it was like very episodic. And it was mostly he would come across someone who's being an asshole to people, and then he either gets in the way of the person or ends up, you know, angering the person for just weird reasons, and he decides, you know what, I'm going to challenge you to a game. And so he would challenge them to a game. And basically the thing was is that the villain of the story would always lose, and when they lost, they then had to play what was called a shadow game, which was basically some horrifying curse that they were put under. Like, a guy who was obsessed with money ends up thinking that, like, falling, like, leaves that have fallen from a tree are all money. There's one guy who's, like, an asshole trying to be a professional singer, and he curses him to make his heartbeat, like, super-duper loud to almost deafening proportions. It was actually surprisingly pretty violent starting off. And then about, I think it was right around the time of the fourth or fifth volume, he came up with the idea of a card game that was like heavily inspired by like Magic the Gathering and stuff like that. And that's where the Yu-Gi-Oh card game came from, basically. And the story actually went on for a while and went into other games after that. Like, there was one story arc that was based heavily around, like, a really elaborate, like, RPG tabletop game with this rich kid. But eventually, the cards ended up becoming the big deal, and it basically defined the whole franchise. And he was heavily involved in the creation of the physical card game as well. Him and his studio did all of the artwork for the cards. I think he actually did all the artwork for like the first deck that came out by himself. But yeah, I mean, Chris, Yu-Gi-Oh was a huge part of our teenage years, man.
I kind of like the manga a lot more when the early parts.
Yeah, I do
when
too.
When it was kind of an action adventure,
yeah,
sort of thing.
Yeah, and I loved the whole idea of, like, it was very kind of Neil Gaiman-esque type of thing. It was, like, the way that Takahashi would come up with different storylines surrounding different games. It was a lot of fun. But, yeah, the cards eventually kind of started to take over and define the whole franchise, which is fine. That's not a problem. It's a fun card game. But it started to get endlessly formulaic after that. It's true.
And the games weren't very good.
Yeah. Yeah, the video games sucked. Yeah, it's true.
I reviewed a couple, and it's like, one of them was a PSP game where you had no idea what the level of the person you were facing is.
Yeah.
So when you just started, you just picked fights, and you found out who was, you know, competitive for you,
yeah,
or not, based on whether they destroyed you or not.
Yeah, pretty sure Konami did most of the games, didn't they?
Yeah, I think they have exclusive rights over that stuff.
Yeah, that makes sense. Shit, but yeah, it sucks, man. He, like, the game actually more or less pretty much took up all of his artistic time at that point after the original manga ended. I think he did draw like one short story for Jump a few years ago, but that was pretty much it. Everything else after that was pretty much all of it was Yu-Gi-Oh themed, and he was mostly there as like a supervisor more than anything else. But yeah, God, it's just so sudden. It sucks, man. So yeah, RIP Takahashi, you were a real one, brother. And now for another shocking death from Japan. The former Prime Minister of Japan, Shinzo Abe, was assassinated in broad daylight during a campaign speech.
Yeah. Kind of a wild thing, because it was initially reported as like that he just like collapsed. Mm-hmm. And there might have been like a shot, somebody thought, and then was like, oh, it was a shotgun.
Yeah.
Shot, which then it ended up being, I think they call it a zip gun.
It was a homemade gun. Yeah.
Yeah.
Have you seen the pictures of it?
No.
Okay. Hold on.
I don't want to see it, but it's.
The reason it's important to see is because it's the amount of, like, it's very much an example of, like, something that was definitely, like, super premeditated. Because here's the thing. Japan has probably the strictest gun control in the industrialized world, like, outside of China.
You have to go through a lot of schooling and testing,
mm-hmm.
training and all that. Which is like, oh, that's a pretty good idea.
Yeah, he had to, like, put it together. Like, you can't really even get, like, gunpowder in Japan. He had to, like, basically collect it from, like, fireworks and stuff over, like, a fairly lengthy period of time in order to collect all of this.
Yeah.
And as for, like, the motive, it's still not entirely clear why the dude shot him. He apparently said something about how he was, quote, discontent with him. He said something about having an issue with some sort of organization or something that Abe might have been associated with. So that could have been some sort of political organization. It could have been a business group. Hell, it could have been a Yakuza clan for all we know. You know,
yeah.
I mean, he was in the Liberal Democratic Party for a long time, and that party is notorious for having a bunch of Yakuza ties. So, yeah, but still, you got to understand, Japan is a place where, modern Japan is a place where political violence just is not a thing that happens there. The last time that a prime minister in Japan, sitting or non-sitting, was killed was way back in the 1930s, like during World War II. And like, I mean, obviously there has been political violence in Japan's past since there. There's the infamous example of the socialist politician Inijiro Azumuma being assassinated on live television by a 17-year-old kid with a short sword. There's, you know, there was a bunch of shit that went down in the 60s and 70s because of the, there was a bunch of new airports that were being built, and like a lot of people were going to lose their houses and shit. But straight up political assassination like this is something that is infinitesimally rare in that country. And so, yeah, it's really shocked a lot of people. I mean, I don't necessarily have the, a really much of an opinion on Abe himself. He was a fairly typical conservative LDP member. He kind of made some talk about kind of denying, like, you know, the Nanking massacre and stuff like that. But holy shit, man.
Yeah. I don't know if you saw the whole thing with far right people around Europe. Somehow got the notion that the shooter was Hideo Kojima. That came from from shitposting Twitter accounts.
Yeah.
Because I believe the picture of the shooter is an older Japanese man with long hair and glasses.
Mm-hmm.
And somebody posted pictures of Hideo Kojima. It was an older Japanese man with long hair and glasses.
Well, long hair in traditional Japanese context, but yeah.
Yeah, it was, you know, ear length,
mm-hmm.
Sort of covering the ears and all that. But the glasses weren't, like, the guy's glasses are sort of normal thin
mm-hmm.
frame glasses, and Kojima has thick frames.
Yep.
All that, but, you know, they found pictures of him, Kojima, with, you know, a Joker shirt.
Uh-huh.
Stuff like that. I think Che Guevara bag, something like that.
Yeah.
Like, oh, he's a far left loon. He's the one that did the killing.
Well, they're not, I mean, as far as politics, they're not entirely wrong. If you played the Metal Gear games, you can get a pretty good idea of what his political views are, but...
Yeah, but obviously...
It's not fucking... Kojima didn't fucking shoot the dude.
He has better things to do.
Yeah.
He's got Western movies to watch.
Yeah, he's got a company. They're setting up a movie studio right now.
Like, yeah. But it's like, that was the whole thing where it's like, oh, this is some extremely racist shit from...
Yeah.
These, you know, right-wing French people and...
Yeah.
I forget where else, but made it onto TV in some of these countries.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, okay, you can see right there, racism's fully alive in Europe.
Yeah.
If you're somehow believing it's not. Because they wouldn't play the, oh, all Asians look alike thing.
Mm-hmm.
And getting it onto TV,
mm-hmm.
that's, you know, wouldn't be a whole thing here. I'll post the pictures here. There you go.
Yeah.
Or it's like him standing around on this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
With like a Soviet's, you know, the wool cap with the bits over the ears kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Or it's like, okay. I mean, he takes pictures of himself all the time, so
yeah,
you could probably find him in various ways to fit whatever narrative you want, but mm-hmm. yeah. That was the whole thing where Hideo Kojima trended for... the exact opposite reasons you would have thought.
Yeah.
So, yeah. There you go.
God damn.
But it's also like Metal Gear Solid 2 is about this exact situation of extreme misinformation on the internet.
Mm-hmm. You may have noticed that Metal Gear Rising Revenge started becoming popular again in the last few months. Well, there's a reason.
People who love that game are weirdos.
Yeah.
Never shut up about it.
Yeah. I mean, don't get me wrong. It's a fun game. But anyway. Then we move on to another awful thing that happened. So I think this happened a couple months ago. A journalist from, I think it was Al Jazeera. Was it Al Jazeera?
Yeah.
Named Shireen Abu Akla. She was in Palestine at that time covering, the latest, like, issues that were happening because, you know, settlers were coming in and trying to take and taking people's homes, which is a sadly very frequent, very frequent event over there. And, she was shot and killed. And, pretty much from the moment people were saying, yeah, it was the Israelis that did it. And of course the Israelis denied it and the U.S. government, because we, you know, our government and their government are just really super tight, was like, no, it couldn't have been them. Maybe it was one of the Palestinians or whatever that shot. No, it turns out that the U.S. this week just announced that it was likely fired by an Israeli soldier.
Yeah, you can definitely tell the Israelis weren't, guilty of this because they... harass the, you know, the wake of her.
Yeah, that's right.
Kind of thing. It's like guilty parties don't do that stuff.
Yeah.
But yeah, Israel said that she was killed during a complex battle with Palestinian militants, that only a forensic analysis of the bullet would confirm whether it was fired by an Israeli soldier or a Palestinian militant.
Mm-hmm.
And so, guess what? The U.S. Said inconclusive tests by independent ballistics experts under U.S. oversight of the bullet fragment recovered from Abu Akla's body found mm-hmm. that it was most likely fired by the Israelis.
Yeah.
Of course, they put out this whole thing on the 4th of July.
Yeah.
So that it wasn't as big of a story as it potentially could have been.
Yep.
Because the shooting happened to cover up this shooting.
Yeah. Yeah, be careful, because there will be people who will actually believe that. But yeah.
When America's involved, shootings cover up shootings all the time.
Yeah.
There was another shooting on the 4th, and people don't know that because of the Highland Park one.
Mm-hmm. But anyway, moving on from there, we get to the epilogue of my little thing about the Georgia Guidestones at the top of the show. The Georgia Guidestones monument this week was damaged by an explosive device, and I'm pretty sure later it was finally just completely dismantled afterwards.
Yeah, I don't know about that. One of the four was destroyed.
Yeah.
Initially. And yeah, this is a very weird structure.
Mm-hmm.
Where they try to describe it as America's Stonehenge, which is like, no.
Not even close.
Stonehenge comes from like 4,000 to 5,000 years ago.
Yeah.
And they've done plenty of research over like its origins and all that. And
yeah.
It was a very carefully constructed thing back when that was a very hard thing to do. This was done by people that wanted to put up this kind of pretentious bullshit.
Yeah. Well, like I said at the top of the show, it's generally believed that the reason they put it up was because it was put up in 1980, which was right around the time Ronald Reagan assumed the presidency and the Cold War started heating up a lot at that point. And it's generally believed that whoever it is put it up there to mean to be like some sort of like guide to some sort of speculative post-apocalyptic civilization trying to rebuild if the Cold War ever got hot or whatever.
Yeah.
But it's also like a crank magnet because, like I said, guys like Mark Dice and Alex Jones are convinced that this is supposed to be some kind of like, you know, plan,
satanic
plan for a new world order, which if it was planned by a satanic new world order, why would they just plop it in the middle of bumfuck Georgia?
That's where you would least expect it.
Yeah, and second of all, why would they want anybody to know what their fucking plans are? That's the problem with all these fucking conspiracy theories. You're like, they're hiding it in plain sight. I'm like, wouldn't anyone smart enough not want to get that kind, let that kind of information leak?
Yeah. It's a stupid thing all around.
Yeah, and of course, I mentioned Candace Taylor. She went on Twitter claiming that this was supposed to be like an act of God or something, which it wasn't. It was a dude or a couple of people in a silver sedan, you know, planting an explosive device at the base of it. And it didn't even destroy the whole thing. It just destroyed one of the slabs.
Yeah, God is God all by himself. He can do anything he wants to do. That includes striking down satanic guidestones.
Yeah, they there's footage from the security cameras of this happening. It's clearly not an act of God. It's a very obvious explosion happening from some sort of bomb.
yeah.
And they're almost certainly going to find the guys who did this pretty quickly.
I think there's video footage of the van.
Yeah.
That they got away in.
Yeah, they got the van. I'm pretty sure there's other footage, too, that they're not releasing to the public yet because they had that thing is like a constant like target for like vandalism from like spray painting graffiti and shit. So because you got to understand, the Guidestones are actually private property. They're under a private trust. So, yeah, they had like a bunch of security cameras around that thing, and it is almost certainly probably going to be rebuilt, or you know, it might take time, but they'll definitely rebuild the thing, and they will almost certainly catch the guys who did it.
Yeah,
but yeah, it was a stupid fucking thing.
Yeah, let's spend more money to put it back up. As let's see, this what's yeah, this guy here is saying, if you didn't like it, you didn't have to come and read it.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, somebody decided they didn't want anyone to read it. It's like,
mm-hmm.
I'm pretty sure you can look up what's on it on the internet.
People yeah. Have... Also, he failed to do that because one of the slabs, you know, like yeah. I said, those slabs have the 10 little rules on like 8 different languages. He just took out 2 of them.
Yeah.
And
you know why? You know why they put this here? Because granite quarrying is a major local industry in that area.
Yeah, so that's kind of the reason why, one of the reasons why it was so easy to commission this thing in the first place.
So you can pay people and you don't have to pay as much to lug it.
Yeah, which is why I'm also convinced that they're going to probably rebuild this thing. Probably not very far, very long. Not probably not very long from now either.
As it says here, local officials and community leaders will have to decide who, if anyone, pays for restoration.
Yeah, they can do a GoFundMe. But yeah, we'll see what happens. But yeah, and the funny thing is, you had all these like conspiracy people were like, "Yes, we struck a blow to Satan," and everybody else was like, "What are the Georgia Guidestones? I'd never heard of the Georgia Guidestones until this point." You know, unless you know were either a conspiracy person or you watched that John Oliver episode.
Yeah, or you lived in the area
in Georgia, like I do.
Yeah.
Or you watched that that one episode of what is it? That conspiracy show that used to play on History Channel that did a show on the Guidestones.
Ancient Aliens?
No, not Ancient Aliens. It's the one that that Jesse Ventura hosted.
He's a reasonable person.
No, you're right. He's not. But yeah. Anyway, moving on from there. Food and Drug Administration has temporarily suspended an order banning Juul e-cigarettes. So, Juul, I think pretty much everybody here knows what Juul Laboratories is, right? It's like the major vape brand that's out there.
Yeah.
And they basically marketed their shit to kids.
Yep.
Like, it's not even a fucking question anymore.
All the flavors and all that.
Yep. And they got a whole generation of kids hooked on nicotine vaping.
Yep.
Because the tobacco companies are like the wean on, you know, the carbuncle on the ass of America. It will not fucking die. But, yeah, yeah, they temporarily suspended an order that earlier that said that they needed to stop selling all of their products within the United States. But Chris, yeah. you can continue.
But yeah, this was done by a federal appeals court, temporarily blocked the government ban. And so the FDA is sort of saying now to stay on the market, companies must show that their e-cigarettes benefit public health.
Mm-hmm.
In practice, that means proving that adult smokers who use them are likely to quit or reduce their smoking, while teens are unlikely to get hooked on them. The FDA originally said Juul's application left for regulators with significant questions and didn't include enough information to evaluate any potential health risks. Juul said it submitted enough information data to address all issues raised. And yeah, 3-judge panel of the U.S. Court of Appeals for D.C. Circuit granted Juul's request for a hold while the court reviews the case. But yeah, on Tuesday, the FDA said it is determined there are scientific issues unique to the Juul application that warrant additional review. But yeah, Sill said the stay and the review do not constitute authorization to market, sell, or ship Juul products.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
Yeah. Now, I believe Juul is actually, like, the company itself is, like, a brand of, what is it, like, Philip Morris, I think?
Probably. I believe all the major vape companies have been purchased by tobacco companies.
It's either, like, Philip Morris or Altria or, what is it, Reynolds or Lorillard, you know, basically the 4 major tobacco companies. And just, I know I've said this before, but I'll say it. As far as, like, on the totem pole of evil corporations, tobacco companies are almost certainly near the top of it.
Yeah, especially companies like Philip Morris.
Yeah. Because everybody has to understand, the tobacco companies have known how dangerous their products were since the 1940s. And they willingly went on poisoning Americans with their products and lying through their teeth about it the whole goddamn. But yeah.
Yeah. So they were, or the Altria bought 35% of Juul.
All right.
Back in 2018.
Yeah. That's, I thought it was one of the major ones. Either them or RJ Reynolds or one of the other ones. But anyway. All right. Speaking of the FDA, FDA is planning to help overseas producers of Baylor B formula to secure long-term authorization in the U.S. And obviously, this is in reaction to the shortage that happens, you know, fairly recently.
Yeah, and they want more competition.
Mm-hmm.
Not have it be based all on the three companies, some of which do not give a shit about, you know, keeping their equipment maintained well so there are no production issues.
Mm-hmm.
Versus just, you know, fattening up their own wallets. But yeah, they have said that they're going to keep shipments coming in.
Mm-hmm.
For that stuff.
Yep.
And yeah, it's kind of said, let's see. Yeah, Abbott, the main company that caused all these issues in the first place, reopened mm-hmm. their plant June 4th, but closed again in mid-June after severe weather caused damage to the plant.
Mm.
And they need time to assess damage and sanitize the factory again after severe thunderstorms. And heavy rain swept throughout southwestern Michigan
mm-hmm.
on June 13th. And so, yeah, they used the Defense Production Act to get formula from overseas. And they brought 43 million 8-ounce bottle equivalents of infant formula into the U.S. FDA has cleared the equivalent of 400 million 8-ounce bottles for import into the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
For the future. And saying that infant formula is an essential food product that the sole source of nutrition for many babies in the U.S. Companies and their manufacturing facilities must meet rigorous FDA standards that ensure the formula is both safe and nutritious. These standards are necessary to protect our children and will not be sacrificed for long-term supply considerations.
Mm-hmm.
And the FDA's policy of temporary enforcement discretion is set to expire in November, but they say they want to renew it if it is necessary to ensure domestic supply. But yeah, they kind of want to help some of these foreign manufacturers to mm-hmm. meet their existing regulatory requirements.
Yeah.
So they can stay on the market and provide more choices.
Yeah.
And making the supply more resilient against future shortages.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But next up, and this was a thing I saw coming all the fucking way, I called it. And this literally just happened earlier today. Elon Musk announced that he is not buying Twitter.
Yeah. To which the Twitter board has said they're going to sue him over this because they came to an agreement.
Yep.
And they want to enforce the agreement.
Mm-hmm.
As, yeah, they have said literally the Twitter board is committed to closing the transaction on the price and terms agreed upon with Mr. Musk and plans to pursue legal action to enforce the merger
mm-hmm.
agreement. We are confident we will prevail in the Delaware Court of Chancery.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, that's the whole thing there. But I saw a good joke that this is the first time Elon Musk has pulled out. just as I think he's recently had his 8th and 9th kids,
mm-hmm.
twins with a former Tesla employee.
Yep.
So, you know, there you go.
Mm-hmm. He apparently, and he's going to have to... It's probably going to end with him having to pay like over $1 billion because I'm pretty sure that's kind of close to what he agreed he was going to give during the buyout. And I mean, for him, that won't be that's just a flash in the pan. That's not a problem for him, which just goes to show how fucking obscenely wealthy this asshole is. But yeah, fuck this guy.
Yeah,
but yeah, you know what?
Bullshit free speech stuff.
Yeah, it's hilarious. By the way, the reaction to all the Musk fanboys and all the freeze peach assholes. You know, because they thought like, oh man, he's gonna bring in all this free speech, and you know, he's gonna let us troll everyone. He's gonna let us say what we want. It's gonna be awesome with Elon as head of Twitter. And, like, everybody was telling him, guys, you realize that he's probably only doing this to try and drive up the stock price? Like, this is what he does. Like, he's done this several times before.
Yeah.
But now it's like, yeah, and it's over. But, yeah. Now for some.
It's never not annoying looking at trends on Twitter. And you're like, oh, Elon Musk has finally gotten it so that when you like this tweet, it'll be blue heart instead of red. Just constantly posting that kind of shit to get people to like their tweet.
Mm-hmm.
Which is just shows how stupid these people are.
Mm-hmm.
They're easily duped. That's why they get their NFTs and shit stolen all the time.
Mm-hmm. Oh, boy. Now for some kind of funny news. Legislators in Minnesota, I guess you could say, accidentally passed a law that let people buy THC edibles. But the thing is, some of them actually didn't understand the bill.
Yeah, they passed it knowing sort of the general thing of what was going to happen. But yeah, this law lets people 21 and over buy and consume food and beverages with a small amount of hemp-derived THC. But yeah, some did not fully understand what the bill was going to do. So the new law says food and beverages cannot contain more than 5 milligrams of hemp-derived THC per serving, and no more than 50 milligrams per package.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, marijuana-derived THC is still illegal in Minnesota.
Mm-hmm.
But this hemp-derived stuff is going to be legal now.
Yeah.
It's chemically the same, but I guess it's slightly less, you know, less capable of providing a high, I guess.
Yeah.
But yeah, the... But this is weird for a Republican-controlled Senate, which has opposed recreational marijuana legalization efforts in the past. And so, yeah, Minnesota State Senate Senator Jim Abeler, Republican from Anoka, told the Minneapolis Star Tribune he did not realize this law would allow THC-infused edibles of any kind. That would apply only to Delta 8 THC products, which is similar to Delta 9 THC, but has not been extensively researched or understood, according to the CDC.
Mm-hmm.
Delta 8 is found naturally in cannabis plants, but in trace amounts. Delta 8 also does not produce the same amount of high as Delta 9. Because of technicality, Delta 8 is considered federally legal and is often available at gas stations, convenience stores.
Mm-hmm.
Lawmakers in Minnesota had sought to regulate this market after an amendment passed unanimously during a Minnesota legislative session in May. Mr. Abeler jokingly said, "That doesn't legalize marijuana. We just didn't do that, did we?" when Abeler proceeded to laugh, Rep. Tina Liebling, Democrat from Rochester, said, "Oh, are you kidding? Of course you have. No, just kidding. Next, we'll do that next, okay?"
No givesies, backsies.
Yeah, so...
The fact that some of the legislators didn't actually understand the bill kind of doesn't really speak well for some of the legislators in Minnesota. Like, you would know.
It speaks for how little they really want to understand the topics they're passing bills on.
Yeah, exactly.
Because if you're going to pass any sort of bill on any sort of marijuana stuff, you should be researching that to understand the nuances so that a bill like this comes along and you don't just, you know, pass it because you think it's one thing and find out it's something different.
Mm-hmm.
Which is how you get, you know, people trying to pass bills like in here in Ohio to teach both sides of the Holocaust.
Mm-hmm.
Which is like, there is no two sides.
Yeah.
And, you know, trying to pass abortion bills in the middle of the night and all this kind of stuff where it's like, no doctors were involved in these abortion bills.
Mm-hmm.
So you see some places that are, you know, withholding medication that is fully legal for the uses they have, but mm-hmm. because it can potentially be used for abortions in rare cases,
yeah,
they pull it, and it's like,
yeah,
this is stupid. You're causing people with other issues great harm.
Well, religious fundamentalists do not tend to be the most intelligent people,
and the cruelty is the point.
I hate to say that, but it's true.
The cruelty is the point. If it,
yeah,
affects the main thing they want to affect. They don't care about the side effects.
Anyway, moving on from there, we got a couple of sports-themed stories. First, the Las Vegas Raiders have hired the first black team president in NFL history.
Yeah, and or the first black woman, I guess, Sandra Douglas Morgan, who was born in Vegas, and so as you can probably guess, was involved in the Nevada Gaming Control Board in some way. So she served as director of external affairs for AT&T Services, Southern Nevada, and as a litigation attorney for an international gaming and hospitality company. She very much has a lot of experience in the things that make Vegas, Vegas. So to be a team president for an NFL team is an interesting way to go. So that is an interesting choice instead of, people that have experience in the football space. So, hey, it could work out well. May not, because she doesn't necessarily have the experience, but I'm sure she at least is familiar with football and all that.
I'm also not terribly knowledgeable of football, but the Las Vegas Raiders, they are the same that were for a while the Oakland Raiders, right?
Yeah, the Oakland and LA Raiders.
They were the LA too. Okay.
Yeah, they moved to Las Vegas a few years ago.
Yeah.
Because they couldn't bilk Oakland into getting them in the new stadium.
Well, yeah. And that's all. And from what I've been told, that's especially a fuck you to the Raiders fan base, because Oakland Raiders fan base was notoriously pretty working class in general.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
So that's tough at this point in the Bay Area.
Mm-hmm.
Where they try to price those people out.
Yeah.
In the city.
Yeah. And then we got some NHL story. San Jose Sharks hired Mike Greer as the first black general manager in NHL history.
Yeah. Yeah, he has gotten, I think, the highest office a black person has had in an NHL team. Which is great. It's not a surprise it's taken this long because, there's not been very many black players and black people involved in team operations over the years. So it's great that somebody has managed to break through that stuff. But he has played 14 seasons in the NHL, a number of them in San Jose for the Sharks. So this is a bit of a homecoming for him to a team he knows a lot about. His older brother has been GM of the Miami Dolphins in the NFL since 2016. That kind of runs in the family there.
Well, now we're on to the entertainment portion of the show. The first thing is that the Duffer Brothers are working on not only a spinoff to Stranger Things, they're also working on an adaptation of The Talisman. Now, for those of you who don't know what The Talisman is, that is a very long doorstopper of a novel that was a collaboration between Stephen King and another author named Peter Straub. It's basically a fantasy novel, more or less. It does kind of tie into the Dark Tower universe. And, there's been talk of, making an adaptation book for a long ass time, and looks like they're finally going to be able to do it.
Yeah, they've made some references to it in season 4 for Stranger Things. So some people were not too surprised by it.
Yeah.
They announced that they had formed their new production company under Netflix called Upside Down Pictures. Bringing on a woman named Hillary Leavitt to run the company. And so, yeah, they're working on a spinoff series of Stranger Things. Though they have not said too much about what that is, but they have said it's going to be a pretty radical departure
Yeah.
Of sorts. They're also working on a stage play
mm-hmm.
related to Stranger Things, set within the world and mythology of Stranger Things.
Mm-hmm.
They have some people working on that as well.
Mm-hmm.
And they're also working on an interesting thing that makes sense. They're working on a live-action TV version of the Japanese manga and anime series Death Note.
Mm-hmm.
Which is like, yeah, that fits them pretty well.
Yeah. And hopefully it'll be better than the other one. God, that thing was a fucking train wreck. But yeah.
Yeah, and that was 5 years ago when that thing came out, the Netflix live-action movie. But that at least was like taking some chances.
Mm-hmm.
Because it was set in America.
Yep.
With some different people there and all that, so...
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's a neat, interesting slate of stuff they're working on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that sounds legitimately neat. We also got a trailer for another Korean film from Netflix called Carter.
Yeah, this is an interesting movie here that... that I've seen described as a mix of the Bourne series and Mission Impossible.
Mm-hmm.
Because it features a man who has none of his memories. Mm-hmm. I think he's called Carter.
Mm-hmm.
Or he finds out somebody's calling him Carter.
Mm-hmm.
And that this involves some sort of dangerous mission that... I'm assuming it's going to affect a lot of people for that. But yeah, called Carter. Stars Ju Won as the main character, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
It'll be out August 5th. And it looks pretty interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Curious to see how this one turns out. Yeah, it'll be out in a few weeks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And finally, we got a trailer for Clerks 3. Yep, there is a third Clerks movie.
Yeah, it's interesting. That kind of follows up after Clerks 2, where they go work at the fast food place nearby.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever it's called, Mubi Burger, whatever it is. I forget what that's called, but... the crew ends up leaving and deciding the next thing is they're going to go back to the Quick Stop and like mm-hmm. buy it and run it in the video store next to it
mm-hmm.
kind of thing. And this whole thing seems to be about them doing all this, especially the main guys, Dante and Jay,
mm-hmm.
who are, you know, middle-aged essentially.
Mm-hmm.
Trying to figure out what to do with their lives as Jay ends up seemingly getting a heart attack.
Mm-hmm.
And they decide to make a movie.
Yep.
And which, of course, leads into some meta shit about, you know, Kevin Smith and making of, like, the original Clerks.
Mm-hmm.
As they take some shots at that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It has a lot of the Kevin Smith people in there. Justin Long, Ben Affleck, various others
mm-hmm.
in there. So looks like it could be neat.
Mm.
In theaters, September 13th and 15th.
Mm.
They're doing like the limited run with the Fathom events
mm-hmm.
kind of thing. So there you go. But yeah, it's being published by Lionsgate.
Mm-hmm.
As the last... Clerks movie was done by what's-his-face, the rapist dude.
I can't even fucking remember anymore.
Harvey Weinstein.
Oh, yeah, company, Weinstein.
Which is where Kevin Smith got his start.
Yep.
With all that stuff, like, it's only been the last few movies that have been outside of that, as, you know, the company doesn't exist anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, this could be neat. Who knows?
Yeah. Definitely sounds neat. But I guess we'll see. But, yeah, okay.
It's a big Smith thing, because, you know, with weed being more legal now.
Yep, definitely.
There's a big THC sign on the video store thing.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, there you go.
Yeah. But, yeah, I do believe that is going to bring an end to, gonna bring an end to our show. Folks, I do believe we've got ourselves a show, so I would like to remind all of our listeners, if you've got a question, comment, or something you want us to read on the air, you can get in contact with us at letsweekenders@gmail.com. That's letsweekenders@gmail.com. We got it linked for in the show notes. Also, on top of Apple Podcasts, you can catch our little bit of unscripted shenanigans at Google Play, RSS, archive.org, or pretty much any kind of, you know, podcast aggregator that you can think of. We do, of course, appreciate you listening to the show. We hope you share your knowledge of the show with those who you love and maybe even those you hate, because they may hate you, but they may turn out to like us. As always, our thoughts are with the people of Ukraine and Russia. We're hoping that the war comes to an end and an equitable peace can be reached. And also, even though it seems to be at a point now where COVID-19 is largely not really a pandemic anymore, it's gotten to the point where it's sort of manageable now. Cases are starting to trickle back up in like heavily urban areas. So if you have not yet gotten vaccinated, I highly encourage you to. And if you are already vaccinated, but you think perhaps you need a booster, if that's something you think you would like to do, do not hesitate. Go and get one. They are very easy to get now. And pretty sure fairly soon they're going to be coming out with the boosters for the newer strains as well. So, yeah. And with that, we're going to bring it to you close. Thank you for joining us this week, and we hope to have you some more bullshit next week. Good night, everybody.